Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farms and gardens of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff, and today I'm so excited to be speaking with an old friend, Dixie Edwards from Watershed Garden Works in Longview, Washington. Welcome, Dixie.
Thank you.
It's so great to have you here, and it's really wonderful to see you. We've been actually probably talking a show's worth of catching up in the lobby of here at KMUN beforehand, and It's winter. We're in this cool, dark time of year. And I think for a lot of gardeners, this seems like a time when everything's shut down and there's really not much to do besides maybe do a little weeding when the ground's not frozen. But Dixie and I both know that this is a great time of year to be looking at native plants. And you guys grow a lot of native plants at your nursery.
Right. That's how we got our start. Or that's how we came back to the farm, was to grow native plants. We were working up in the Puget Sound area doing water quality work for agencies. And we couldn't find the native plants we needed for the projects we were doing. So Scott and I looked at each other and said, this is our way back to the farm.
And when you say back to the farm, talk about the land. Where was this land and whose was it?
Well, when we started the nursery, we were in the Puget Sound on rented land. It's difficult to farm on rented land.
Yes, it
because
is.
Because you're doing all this work and, you know, it's not going to be where you're going to stay. So after we had our first child, mm-hmm. Rose, who has worked in the markets here ever since mm-hmm. we've been doing markets, that was kind of her impetus to break from the Puget Sound area. And by then we had started the native plant nursery.
Uh-huh.
And so our families were in Longview. Our extended families was there. We thought it would be perfect to move at the time when she was 3 months old.
Yeah.
And so we moved in nursery, and we had this little baby down to Longview to land that had belonged to my husband's family, about 6 acres.
Okay.
And I will never move a nursery again.
Oh, my goodness. I'm in awe that you did that. I moved a farm once, and it was almost broke me.
So. Right. You're just kind of going, this is crazy.
I know. You know?
And one time we had loaded the truck up so much that as we're going down the road, uh-huh. taking the load down, we couldn't stop the truck, and we're going, my daughter's going to be an orphan.
Oh, no.
Because wow. It was going into a freeway.
So how long ago was this?
That was 24 years ago.
Wow. Yeah.
So
you've been able to put down roots, literally and figuratively.
Literally. Yes. Literally. And yeah. So once we had the nursery down there, a lot of our clientele were in the Puget Sound area.
Okay.
And many of those kind of just supported us until we got established in Southwest Washington. And so we just started increasing our production down there, and finding new clients. We do a lot of work for agencies as well as landowners and mm-hmm. that need to enhance their.
So for an agency, you're looking at volume. They need to replant.
Yeah, volume. It's a wholesale. We work for county governments, city mm-hmm. governments, the state DOT, mm-hmm. those kind of people.
But you also have a retail operation,
we
too.
We do.
And I think about when I first met you was when we were both vendors at Astoria Sunday Market.
Right.
On the same block.
On the same block, right
and
across from the
LA. You know, it was crazy because I always used to just like wander away from my booth and wander up to yours and look at all the fruit trees and the amazing shrubs and native plants that you had and just like, oh, I want some of this and I want some of that. And probably half of what we made, I ended up spending at your booth. But it was so fun. When you did that for quite a while.
We did. We did it for probably a little over 10 years from the day that market started, the mm-hmm. Sunday market started. And I had been coming down to Astoria supporting KMUN, their mm-hmm. plant sale before that. And it was just, there was so much enthusiasm for plants that when the organizer for that Sunday market came to the Longview market and was asking vendors to mm-hmm. come, I just looked at him and said, that's such an underserved market.
Yeah.
Because when I was doing the KMUN sales, there would be like a wall of people it opened at 8 a.m. Yeah. And there'd be like a wall of people, and I wasn't finished setting up. And I was just like, oh, the tidal wave's coming.
Yeah, that's so great. And you always had such beautiful stuff. And I love that there was this amazing focus on edible plants. Both native and non-native. And then you also have always had a lot of stuff for pollinators too.
Right.
And I know, I mean, just from my own experience with working with native plants and doing habitat restoration, and then on my own farm trying to plant for pollinators as well. I mean, native plants really lend themselves to that. They are best for native pollinators.
Right.
So maybe talk a little bit about that and why this time of year is a good time of year to be incorporating native plants.
Well, the best time to plant any native plant is during the rainy season.
Mm-hmm.
So when the rains start until they end is the absolute best time. We tell people that in the fall and in the winter is the best time because you put them in the ground, they're working on their roots. Mm-hmm. They're developing their roots so that when spring comes and the leaves come out, then they're ready to go.
Yeah, the roots are established in the soil.
Their roots are established more, and there's less work in keeping them alive.
And you don't really have to water them.
Right. You might water them the first summer.
Yeah.
But after that, if they're going to survive. Native plants are used to our monsoon season and our dry season, and our dry season is really dry.
Yeah. So they've adapted to that.
They've adapted to that. They know that, okay, I can make it through the dry season, and then they thrive during our wet season.
Which is great because some plants really struggle with that situation.
Right.
So you know, and the idea with making sure there's food for pollinators is to have things that bloom over a long period of time.
Right.
So what are some of the best, like in your experience, what are some of your favorite plants to plant when you have pollinators in mind?
When I have pollinators in mind, I want them for the whole season. So I look at the ones that are blooming in the spring,
mm-hmm.
which are usually lupins, mm-hmm. different, and we have several different kinds of lupins. And then there's Henderson's checkered mallow.
Oh, it's such a beautiful plant.
It is. And the first time it came to us, I got the seeds from our banker who had our loan. And she's in El Waco. She was in El Waco. And she gathered the seeds for us, and we started planting them. And I learned about Henderson's checkered mallow. There's also another meadow mallow that is similar, only taller and kind of not as pink.
And they tolerate some wet soil, too.
They do. They'll tolerate some soil. And in Longview, I get them to bloom twice.
Whoa, really?
They'll bloom in the spring, early spring, and then they die completely back during the heat of the summer. And then in the fall, they start coming back and bloom again.
Wow.
So because I'm a little more inland, I get...
You get a double. Wow.
Yeah. And they're so beautiful. That salmon pink.
Oh, yeah. There's another really pretty red one is that red flowering currant.
Yes. The red flowering currant usually blooms in April where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
And the Indians called it the windflower because it was blooming early.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hot pink. And I have been, the hummingbirds love them.
Yeah.
You know, besides any of the native pollinators that are out in the spring that early.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I had one growing where it normally doesn't. Usually they like a real dry. I see them a lot in abandoned gravel pits. And I had one that volunteered itself on the north side of my house next to a faucet,
mm-hmm.
which is just totally opposite. And it thrived.
Mm-hmm.
So they can be quite adaptable.
Yeah. And very beautiful too.
Yes.
Like sometimes with the natives, working them into your garden, they can get kind of unruly. They, you know, they aren't necessarily the kind of plants that you trim into a beautiful little hedge or shape. So you need to have a place where you can allow things to get a little bit wild. But boy, the benefit is so huge.
I know. And there's just that hot pink of the red flowering currant is so beautiful.
What about some others? Where?
As I go through the summer, I look at... there's the spring ones, like I've said,
the
mallow and the lupins. And then I go into yarrow.
Oh.
Yarrow is a good one, especially for Astoria.
Mm-hmm.
They grow a lot on the beaches and stuff. And then goldenrod,
mm-hmm.
Canadian goldenrod, which can be very aggressive. But is beautiful and produces a ton of flowers.
Yeah.
And then in the fall, I'll have our Douglas Aster, which can get big. You need a space for it.
Yeah.
And it'll get about more than five feet tall.
The beautiful purpley, pale purple flowers.
Covered with these purple flowers.
And you were talking about noticing it through the winter, too. Tell us a little bit about, because, you know, sometimes we think of, you know, flowering plants, and it's like, oh, the benefit is that it flowers, and the you know, pollinators, the bees, they go and get the nectar from it, and then it's done, and that its benefit is done.
Right.
But many things, if you let them go, sometimes the seeds are beneficial, but then the habitat they create.
Yeah, with the Douglas Aster, because it is so thick where I have it, and I didn't trim it down. I'm not a clean your garden kind of a person, you know, at the first notice.
Yeah.
And in the winter, I was watching how the birds, there were a lot of birds that were in my thicket of Douglas Aster. Now, this is a perennial, so in the spring, I do cut it down so it grows back, but mm-hmm. They were not only taking the seeds that were left over from the bloom, but it was so thick that it gave them protection. It was like a thicket that they could go in for protection, either from predators or from the weather.
So just great overwintering bird habitat.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and sometimes I know there's often a tendency, and I think it's becoming less and less, but that whole, like, clean your garden and cut everything back. And
right.
I've just really gone to, like, you know, it's great for me, because, like, usually by the end of the season, I'm like, I don't want to prune anything else.
You're just everything dies in the garden.
But it's great to feel like when you leave all those plants and all those seed heads that you're actually doing something beneficial for the environment as well. So that's good. And you genuinely are. That's a really wonderful thing. So I think, and what about native plants? I mean, because I love edible things too. So, like, natives that are good with, like, edible berries and things like that.
Oh, there's so many of them.
I know. I feel like we just have an abundance of great berries around here.
You do. And I told that to a native one day. I said, there's no reason for anybody to starve in the Northwest. And he goes, but you have to know what you're eating.
Well, that's true. That's true. You do want to know which ones are edible and which ones aren't. But of the edibles, you know, I think about the huckleberries and salmon berries and, well, there's a bunch of different huckleberries, aren't there?
There are. And there's usually down here in Astoria, all along the coast, there's a lot of evergreen huckleberries.
Yeah.
The only place you see as many is up in the Puget Sound region, because they like that glacial till.
Mm-hmm.
If you go inland from here, the only place you'll see them is maybe on the cliffs along the Columbia.
Okay.
But they do really well here.
Yeah.
And
they're beautiful plants.
And they are. They're used. I've seen them trimmed in a formal hedge,
mm-hmm.
and they survive that. The flowers are nice,
mm-hmm.
and then the berries. The berries are late. They come, like, in October, where I'm at. And I like them after the first frost, because that brings the sugars out into the berries. And they're so good.
And they're little. It's definitely a labor of love to pick them.
Oh, yeah.
And you could be picking for so long, and then you're like, oh, I've got a cup of berries. But they're the best.
You know what I got?
Yeah?
Is there's a Scandinavian picker. That,
like a rake.
Like a rake,
yes.
And it has a little container to it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They, in Scandinavia, they use it for picking low berries.
Like lingonberries.
Lingonberries and cloudberries and stuff like that. And I found that on the evergreen huckleberry, I just rake the plant, and you get a lot of insects and dead leaves and stuff like that. You know, it'll take a little cleaning. And I learned so much from my customers that an old time customer, he said the first money he ever made up in the Puget Sound area was picking the evergreen huckleberry.
Really?
Yeah. But he told me the way he cleaned it, you know, he wouldn't worry about all the debris and everything. Afterwards, he would take a wet deer hide, put it over a flat board, and wet it a little bit. And then he'd roll all the berries down his little incline, because all the leaves and the debris would stick to the wet deer hide, and all the berries would go down cleaned.
Oh, I don't know if I really want to try that stuff.
I know. I have tried it with cloth and stuff, wet cloth. It doesn't probably work as well as his sounded, but anyway.
Well, I imagine the little hairs on a deer hide would also maybe grip the...
Well, it was a tan.
Oh, it was tan. Okay, yeah. So that's interesting. I wonder, well, yeah. Okay, maybe you won't do that, but the rake, I'm definitely going to look into one of those rakes.
And you don't have to go to Finland or somewhere for them. We got them a big batch of them from Alaska.
Oh, really?
There was, yeah. And those were plastic. So they're around.
Yeah.
Their various forms are around.
Of rakes. I know there's rakes out there. People use them for blueberries. And then also chamomile, harvesting chamomile. I've seen chamomile rakes as well. Because it's a similar thing where there's lots of little tiny things that you have to pick. And if you're just like picking each one individually, oh my goodness, it can take so much time.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to like breathe and say it's a meditation. It's a meditation. But sometimes you're like, meditate faster.
And like the red huckleberries that we have are delicious. As a kid, we had horses and I'd ride through the woods and we'd break off a branch and then eat them as we rode down the trail. But those are very good.
Yeah.
One year we pick some.
Yeah.
And for us as growers of native plants, we have a kind of a conflict between.
Yeah.
Those are for seed.
Yeah.
Those are for seed. You don't eat them.
Yeah.
But one year my husband decided it was like, I think, a niece's graduation, and we made a pie out of them.
Oh, wow.
It's the most delicious pie.
Red huckleberry pie?
A red huckleberry pie.
Wow. I don't even think about how many berries that would have taken. Wow. But that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
It was really good to eat.
I'm getting hungry already.
And then with the huckleberries, there's the mountain huckleberry. And my mom... Every Labor Day weekend, we spent one day up at Mount St. Helens, and this was before it blew.
Uh-huh.
And it was the whole day was devoted to picking mountain huckleberries.
Wow.
Because of the taste. The taste is incredible.
Yeah.
And we'd have a great time up on the mountainside, just, you know, eating and picking. And
Would you freeze them? Would you can them?
Yeah. My mom would freeze them.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite book called, I think it's Huckleberries for Sal. And it's a good kids book.
Uh-huh.
And she would, in the pictures, she was always canning them.
Uh-huh.
I always like frozen ones.
Frozen ones. I totally want to talk berries more, but I just want to take a very quick moment to remind people that you are listening to Coast Community Radio here at KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. We're also streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you're just joining us right now, we are speaking today on In Season with Dixie Edwards. She's from Watershed Garden Works in Longview. They have an amazing plant nursery. They sell native plants. They sell fruit trees and all kinds of other plants. You have a small farm, you grow produce, you do a lot, and you also, and just, we were just talking about berries, and I'm thinking about the jams and jellies that you make. So you also have a whole line of value add jams and jellies you make.
As our farm grew, we put in orchards. We, you know, any empty space got filled with something. So we have a lot of fruit trees that as they aged, they produced more.
Yeah.
So I needed something to do. If I didn't sell the fruit, what was I going to do with this? And there was just so many jams and jellies my family could eat. So in Washington, you have to have a certified kitchen to sell canned goods and stuff. And when we were putting up a new garage and we had an office on the second floor, I also included a kitchen.
So you could process.
So I could process.
That's,
it was a separate
smart.
Kitchen. And so I started processing all the extra fruit we had for jams and jellies.
That's a lot of work.
Right. It is.
But
it is.
But they are delicious and just so beautiful and such a nice range of them, too. I mean,
right,
you've got a lot of different. And do you incorporate native berries into it?
I do occasionally, you know, but again, it comes back to the conflict, either growing new plants from the seeds that are inside the berries or making some fruit. So not a lot of the native, but as close to it. I mean, like the blackberries and things. The blackberries that I use are the Himalayan and the evergreen, which are not native per se, but they've made themselves at home. And
yes, they have.
As one person asked me, it's like, how long do you have to be here to be a native? And I think the evergreen blackberries and the Himalayan blackberries are here to stay.
Yeah, they are never, ever going to get...
Right. You're not going to get rid of them.
Not ever. No. So I know you used to come down here and do markets in the Astoria area.
Yes.
So for anyone that's been to farmers markets in our region, they've probably met you there. But I know you've turned to focus more on the Longview area now. Maybe tell us a little bit about what's going on in Longview and the kind of a local food farmers market scene there. Because you've got a farmers market that's going on there now? Or not right now at this time of year.
Yes. We used to do Farmers markets, we would do one on Saturday, and we do one on Sunday here.
Yeah.
And it just became so hard.
That's a lot of work.
It is,
and especially
a lot of
back
work.
To back. Oh my goodness.
Back to back, and you can't move on Monday.
Yeah.
And it was like, as you age, it becomes harder to move on Monday. So we were turning it more over to our kids, and mm-hmm. Rose and Austin used to come down here mm-hmm. and do the Thursday night market. And as they aged, they went off to college and everything, and they're doing things. So we backed off of that, and we were doing more CSAs. We started a farmer's market, a small one in a residential area, and that has kind of morphed because that was shut down by the city, but we've changed that.
Yeah, through a lot of your own personal work, getting some ordinances changed and a lot of community involvement.
Yeah, we had to get an ordinance for Longview changed so that they would allow a small farmer's market in residential areas. And we did that. But in the meantime, we started doing more CSAs.
And just for people who don't know, explain what a CSA stands.
It's a community-supported agriculture, mm-hmm. and it's like buying a subscription. Mm-hmm. And you buy the subscription, mm-hmm. and then every week you get a box
of
food.
So you pay in advance of the mm-hmm. season, like you pay this time of year, and then during the growing season you get a weekly box of food
right.
for a certain set number of weeks.
Right.
Yeah. So you started doing that.
We started doing that, and at first we didn't think we were organized enough to do it. So we started out small. We had mm-hmm. 20. And by the next year, the community in Longview, which is changing because they have more options there, mm-hmm. and they would go shopping down in Vancouver or Portland and stuff sometimes. But now there's more of a interest in buying local,
mm-hmm.
and food is important. So our CSAs went from 20 to like 135.
What?
We were in a panic because
that's a lot of vegetables.
Can we do this? Can we grow vegetables enough for that many people? Not all of them were full shares. We did have a $15 share. And but we made it through the first season.
Wow.
And we're kind of going, okay, we can do it. We can do it now.
Yeah.
We're going to be, we're planning for it better. And
always a plus.
And we're getting feedback from mm-hmm. the people who what happened was institutions came to us. We had the local hospital, Peace Health.
Uh-huh.
They wanted it was for their staff people. They were trying to get their staff people to eat better.
Oh, wow.
And so there was a person that they hired who kind of organized it and talked to us and worked out some details, and we've continued working with them to figure out, okay, this didn't work. You know, this is what the people want a little bit more. How much is a full share?
Yeah.
You know, so we're kind of refining it
That's
and in
so
the process,
great.
Refining it for everybody else.
That's so great. And you are still going to do a farmer's market this year?
Probably.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's so great for Longview that there's some really nice options out there now.
Right.
For local food. I mean, it's always exciting. I miss seeing you locally very selfishly, but I'm excited that you have options in your area. And now I'm looking at the clock and I'm just feeling so depressed because I feel like I have like 2 hours more of talk that we could talk about.
Yes.
But I want to make sure that people know how to connect with you because you do still deliver plants down to this area.
We do.
And you'll be selling at the Clatsop County Master Gardeners event
we'll
in May. I think it's May 13th.
Yes.
So that people can come and buy stuff from you there. If people want to connect with you, how do they find you?
We still are in the phone book, I think.
And you have a website.
We have a website, watershedgardenworks.com, and we have a Facebook page,
mm-hmm.
and that's where you... More on a daily basis, you can see what is available.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who help us kind of keep that up and make mm-hmm. a connection. We are open for retail from probably about sometime in the middle of March until the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
From, let's see, it's Monday, Tuesday through Friday, 10 to 5,
okay.
and Saturday, 10 to 2.
Okay.
Yeah, and the middle of March until the end of October.
Yeah, and I will definitely encourage people. It's if you're in like on the coast, well worth the drive to Longview. Their nursery is amazing, and they have so many great plants there. It's wonderful to walk around and see what's growing. And I mean, like anytime you get to walk around a nursery, I mean, there's you know what you might bring to an event is just such a small portion of what you actually have.
Right.
And so if you're interested in in native plants, but also in fruit trees, and what I think is so amazing is that you have so much experience with what grows well in our region.
Right.
And I think because you've been coming out to the Astoria area for so long, that whole coastal climate is not unfamiliar to you.
Right.
And so you are able to advise people, well, what's going to do well in your garden? What's going to grow for you here? And there's an amazing range of beautiful, you know, natives and non-natives and fruit trees and shrubs and all kinds of things that Dixie is just brilliant at telling you about. So
we come down. We mm-hmm. Actually sell a lot of plants for restoration work down uh-huh. here in Astoria in the area. And we even grow like dune grass, native uh-huh. dune grass for the beaches.
Yeah.
And we just have a lot of plants that we know would work for this area.
Yeah.
And with the fruit trees, we usually try them out beforehand, and I know what will work here.
Yeah.
It's like
We've
tried all the figs that are out there, and I know one fig that you could probably get a crop off.
That is just so cool. It's just so exciting. I know I talk to people, and I hear so much interest in incorporating some edibles into people's gardens, even if they don't necessarily want to have a vegetable garden,
mm-hmm.
and then more and more interest about incorporating native plants, both for their hardiness and they don't need water, but also for pollinator habitat, because we all,
right.
I think, more and more understand the importance of bees and pollinators in our life.
And especially our native bees.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, they don't look like honeybees, especially mm-hmm. My husband calls the bumblebees like the manatees of the bee world.
Oh, they're so beautiful.
They're
so fat and bumbling and just, oh, I love them so much.
Yeah.
I know.
And we were beforehand talking about pollination, and bumblebees are special. They pollinate flowers that are difficult for honeybees to pollinate, in that they buzz and that releases the pollen, and they can get into, I don't know how they do it because they're so big, but they get into other flowers that are difficult for honeybees to extract their food.
So feed the bumblebees.
Yes.
I know. So please connect with Dixie. Go check out their website, Watershed Garden Works. And I just can't say enough good things about all the work that you do. Thank you so much for all that you've brought to our region. It's so great. And it's wonderful to see you again. Thank
I
you
always
so
love
much.
This area.
I know. Well, it's just, we're just so lucky to have you in our community and to have your knowledge and your experience to share with everybody. So a great resource. Definitely check them out and go see them when you can. It's worth it. And we're coming to the end of our show today, and I just want to thank everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.